In an abandoned underground city at the Spanish coast near Malaga, I found a USB stick containing 300 random movies, from arthouse to weird, from obscure to notorious. Now, in lockdown, it is time to watch and discuss them all in an international podcast project. Two Turks and a German, two filmmakers and a mystery man. Welcome to Mysterium Pictorum.
Welcome, welcome to Mysterium Pictorum. And this is going to be a very special episode because we are going to be talking about a movie that we have been dreading to watch for like the complete time we've been making this podcast. We've been saying, at some time we're going to watch that movie. And that movie we did watch this time. Shatan Tango by Belatar. But before we discuss it, let's ask the most important and meaningful questions first. Who are we? Nisan, who are you?
Hi, I'm Nisan. I am a filmmaker and an actor from Hamburg. And I think it's sad that we don't know what number this podcast is anymore. You should 35. Start editing again. Oh, okay.
See, someone is keeping the books, and who might that special someone be, Aaron? Who are you?
It's episode 35. That's all you need to know. With a twist.
Wow. And I'm Lars Henriks. I am a writer director from Hamburg, Germany. Come join me on TikTok. It's Henriks Lars, I think, or Lars Henriks, some combination of those words. I'm also on Instagram sometimes. And we just launched a new website for our little production company. It's www.antikino, but kino spelled with a Y, like in the Shakespearean weird, you know, antikino.com. You can find out stuff about our movies there, about our different podcast projects, and about our upcoming film festival here in Hamburg.
Speaking of that, we are gonna probably 90%, we're gonna have Mysterium Pictorum live on this podcast.
This episode is definitely not coming out before the live episode.
We are gonna reveal the mystery man. Who knows? Maybe you will have time
To edit like six episodes. Yeah, okay. Like we're behind. We're behind. Whatever. You guys, because I haven't had a weekend in quite a while. Before we start, you guys, please, we need iTunes reviews. I'm pretty sure at the point when this comes out, we still need iTunes reviews. Yeah, give us 5-star reviews. Otherwise, you people are dicks. All right, Shatan Tango. First things first, how did we watch it? Yaren, how did you watch this fine movie?
I watched it in a way that no cinephiliac, I guess, would be happy about it, so I don't want to talk about it.
I think you cheated yourself out of a great experience, Yaren. Nisan,
I'm sure. Yeah.
Nisan, how did you watch it?
I watched it in 3 days. I started Friday. You and me watched the first hour. And then I watched Saturday a couple hours by myself on my laptop. And today we watched the last 2 hours together.
But I do want to stress, I watched it in one sitting. So I'm still 1 point ahead.
How long was your one sitting?
I don't want to discuss that.
We watched the first hour in our home theater. We watched it on the Criterion channel, where they have it in like pristine quality. It's fantastic. You all go subscribe to the Criterion channel. They have great stuff like Shatan Tango. They have kiddie porn like Valerie and her Week of Wonders. It's really it's a nice service to subscribe to.
They should sponsor us.
Yeah, they should sponsor us. Those child pornographers should give us money for all the advertisement we do for that child pornography platform.
By the way, was it like HD remake or?
Yeah, it was definitely HD. It was pretty up to date master. So yeah, we watched the first hour on there in our home theater, and yeah, then I had to go to Berlin to work on the worst piece of shit television show I have ever worked on. And I will talk about this excessively on this podcast because there is a thematic tie-in. Plus, I just have to vent. I never missed ISIS. But sitting in this TV show, which had like the new German chancellor, and I mean, I'm going to talk about this, but the fact that he was there means that, I don't know, he, whatever. I'm not going to endorse terrorism anymore, but those fucking terrorists always show up at the wrong places. So this TV show that I had to work on last night, that would have been the correct place.
You will be bombed too, Lars.
No, I was safely out of the way. So I watched most of it actually on the train, but in the correct speed. It was quite harrowing. It was making a long long journey on the train feel longer. No, but I actually did enjoy it. And then, yeah, the last, I think, 2.5 or 3 hours we just watched today. That was quite a journey, as I think it ought to be. So how did we like it? Yaren, you go first. How did you like it?
It was actually okay when you get rid of like the whole, I don't know, 3 minutes turning around camera fixed on single point scenes. Like it's really good.
Yeah, there's a nice 1.5 hour movie in here. No, I have to say I absolutely loved it. I think it's one of my all time favorite cinematic experiences. I would love to have like a tiny film theater to torture people in to put this on with no intermission.
That's
if that's physically
much.
Possible without falling asleep. No, but I really, really loved it. We've talked about the Panos Cosmatos film a few weeks back, The Black Rainbow or something, Beyond the Black Rainbow. We said there that slow cinema basically assumes that you ponder on the thoughts that the films bring up in these long takes, and you have like time to sit with your thoughts, and just these Panos Cosmatos films don't really trigger any thoughts. And I think this film is like the ultimate example for the opposite. I think like it's exhausting and it's indulgent in a way, but it's so much about the landscape and about sitting with these people in their hopeless situations. And I think if any movie has the right to its excessive length, then it is An Elephant Sitting Still. Then that 4.5 hour movie by Sion Sono, I just forgot the title, and this one. Those are the three very long films that I really enjoyed. But the Sion Sono movie isn't even slow cinema. It's just very hectic.
I agree with you too. I also really liked it. I thought it was really boring, but it was also really good. It's just very long and you have to be patient, and it's very effective. Like when I watched like, I think 3-4 hours by myself, I felt sick because it touched me so much, and not like, you know, those Hollywood tear-jerking movies where you cry and then you forget why you cried because of the manipulative music. It was like, I felt sick. From all the Bellatar movies we watched, I also thought those acting scenes worked better for me in this one. They weren't so awkward like in the other movies, you know?
Acting-wise, I really love this one. Like, I also still love Werkmeister Harmonies, and it might even be still my favorite Bellatar film, just because it's a bit more, I don't know, there's a bit more warmth there. Like, this is so
uplifting.
Hopeless. Yeah. Uplifting might be the wrong word.
I mean, compared to this one, a kid kills herself.
It's the Bellatar feel-good movie. this one isn't. I read lots of interviews and articles about the movie while I watched the movie. because I had the time. I had thoughts to ponder. Like Bellatar talked about himself being like, he said, I'm poor and ugly and I make films about poor and ugly movies.
He
said that. And Nissan, now that you just mentioned like Hollywood tear-jerking movies, and I just was working on this horrible TV show that I am going to talk about in detail later on. I think this is how poor people depict poverty, as opposed to how rich people depict poverty. You know what I mean? Like there's no, there's no romantic images here. There's
no
hope.
I know what you mean, because that's what I said. You're such an ass.
Like, rich people will present you with these romantic and kitschy narratives about poverty and about people who work hard and escape their circumstances. Just to say to poor people, you know, if you just work hard enough, like us, like we did for our inheritance, then you can be one of us. Capitalism is for everyone. And these films just go, no, it's it sucks being poor, and you will be poor, and that's it. You have no chance. I kind of love that.
And it's not just them being poor, of course. But it's the whole poverty.
What are you eating?
Them being, sorry.
She doesn't give a fuck.
I do.
You know those poor people? They can't even afford chocolate.
They're complaining about not having bread. I mean, why don't they just eat brioche?
Oh, shut up. You suck. It's cheap chocolate. I'm not that rich too.
It's Aldi chocolate.
It's not, you know, the lack of money, of course, but it's what's really sad and depressing is the lack of perspective, future, hope.
Yeah, hope. Hope might seem to be the thing that these people lack, and that's what makes it so depressing. But hope, on the other hand, is such a poison. Like presenting poverty with this perspective of hope and of things getting better, that's just aimed at making poor people docile and make them accept their circumstances and live with it.
I don't think they were hopeless, by the way.
Yeah, see, exactly. Hope was a poison in this movie. They were hopeless in reality, but they were presented with a hope by the people in power, and that was used against them. But let me elaborate on that by summing up the 7-hour story of this of this movie.
In under 2 minutes.
I will try under 4 minutes. Is that okay?
No, shoot for 2.
Okay. Take my time, okay?
All right. I'll give you a start. Get ready.
Uh-huh,
Formulate your sentences. And 3, 2, 1, go.
So we meet this village. This village is cut off from the world by rain. The streets are very muddy, so you can't leave and can't really come in. There's a guy. The guy is called Futaki, and he fucks another guy's wife, Mrs. Schmidt. He fucks Mrs. Schmidt. Mrs. Schmidt washes her vagina, washes her privates in the beginning over like a bowl with water. The older guy comes in, her husband comes in, Mr. Schmidt, and Futaki, he hides from Mr. Schmidt. Mr. Schmidt says to Mrs. Schmidt, let's skip town with the community money. Let's just split it amongst the two of us and skip town right now. Futaki hears this, goes around the house, comes in through the front door like he was just wandering by on accident, and he had just heard what Mr. Schmidt is planning, and he demands getting half of that money. They say, okay, let's do this. But in that moment, somebody knocks on the door, and Mrs. Schmidt gets informed that Ishmael, a guy who presumably had died a while before, had come back to town. So this somehow puts a stop to the plan. Then we meet this guy who is back from the dead. We meet him and a friend of his. The two of them get employed by the secret police from the city to fuck with the villagers. Somehow they're supposed to spy on the villagers. I don't know really what their plan is and what their mission is. There seem to be two different things, like the plan that they have on the one hand, and then their mission that they were given by the police on the other hand. But whatever. They had a boy tell the villagers that they are dead, so when they would come back, everybody would assume they had come back from the dead. Then we meet a fat man. He's called the Doctor. The Doctor spies on everyone. He fires his help, who brings him soup, and he also drinks a lot of schnapps. He's out of schnapps suddenly, so he has to go out and buy new schnapps. He does that. He wanders around for a day. He meets some girls who offer him sex. He then later collapses and gets taken away on a horse-drawn carriage at the next morning. People in a bar in this village, they drink and they insult each other heavily. Then a brother and a sister, young kids, they go and plant a money tree. They bury all their money, and the brother tells the sister that a tree is going to grow there. The girl then goes and tortures and kills her cat. She discovers after this that her brother had taken all their money. She then carries her dead cat around. She asks the fat doctor to help her, probably with the cat getting, I don't know, help to live again or something. She gets rebuffed and she's very, very sad, eats rat poison, kills herself, cuddling her dead cat. It's really, really, really sad. The townspeople drink and dance in the bar. They discuss Irimiash, the guy who's back from the dead. They don't know about him. He is sort of a Jesus figure, but maybe he's not. The girl's mother comes into the bar looking for the girl. The girl is all the while looking through the window. This has been taking place before the suicide of the girl. This movie works like that. It's like a tango. It always cuts back or jumps back in time. So now the cheating wife's husband balances bread on his forehead to the amazement of no one. Everyone wants to fuck the cheating wife. This is all taking place on this party. Then there's more great bread stuff. Two people chew on the same bread. I don't know. It's really funny. It's funnier than it sounded when I said it. Then they find the dead girl. They mourn her. Irimiash rightfully blames the town and then proceeds to scam them out of all their cash to buy a new farm or something, he says. Irimiash then fucks Mrs. Schmidt. Everyone goes to leave town. They smash their possessions, like their I don't know. They smash their stuff and then they want to skip town. They leave town and they talk about how they have left the doctor behind and how he will probably starve, but they don't give a fuck. They then sleep in an abandoned house. Apparently they wanted to like set up a workshop in these houses. They sleep. We get told what they are dreaming about. Irimiash, his buddy and the boy who helped them, the boy, by the way, helped them because Irimiash promised him to help him fuck Mrs. Schmidt and the other elderly woman in that town. It's really, really, really weird. But also on the money, like this is what small towns are like. Irimiash, his buddy and the boy, they go to the city. They go into a bar. They talk to a shady man who sells them explosives or something. The townspeople want their money back when Irimiash comes back to them. Irimiash shames them into submission, as he does. He then splits up the townspeople. They thank him. Like, he puts them all into work in different places and takes all their money. And they thank him for scamming them. Then two cops get like a report written by Irimiash about that time about that town. It's filled with insults, and they make the report sound less vulgar. Then the doctor comes home. He has been in a hospital all this time. He doesn't know everyone has left town. He hears a church bell, goes to the abandoned church. In it stands a man saying, "The Turks are coming." The doctor walks home slowly, nails his windows shut, and in total darkness starts writing the book, the story of this film. He writes the very words this film opens with. So the film is a circle. Yaren, how did I do?
6 minutes.
Oh, fuck that. Well, 6 minutes, 7 hours.
Yeah. A minute for each hour, almost.
Almost. Less than a minute for less, minute yeah. for each hour. So yeah, Billa, I told that story quicker. Yeah, but it's a huge story.
But you skipped the best scene, in my opinion,
which dialogue scene
in any Bellatar movie I've seen so
which,
far.
Which one?
Irimiash, when we first meet him, and the short, fat guy in front of that police officer, some guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They get employed by the police.
He gives a speech.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, there's a quote in there that I love a lot. We laughed. This is the funniest Bellatar movie.
Yeah.
Like when we meet
from all the child suicide.
I mean, it's not funny child suicide as we're used to it. Not the way Adam Sandler would do it. Yeah, there's I think one joke in the beginning with Irimiash, and then there's another joke later on, and that's a fart joke. I'm happy to report there's a fart joke in Chata Tango.
I also laughed when the guy fell from his chair and said, "I think I drank too much." That was
yeah.
funny.
Yeah, yeah. Also, so, yeah, lots of
three laughs.
See, yeah, there's hope. There is laughter in the poor's life.
I mean, it's not really a joke a minute, not precisely.
The drunk guy fell, ha 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 ha.
But it's a joke every two and a half hours. Yeah, so this movie, I think there is like so much to talk about here. So yeah, the structure of this movie is a tango. Apparently the tango always goes like three steps in one direction and then three steps back. somehow, and like all these episodes start a bit earlier than the episode before that ended. So it's quite beautiful and also confusing in the beginning.
I think that's a nice idea, but I didn't understand it immediately.
I'm sure someone made a chronological cut or something.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, it's not really self-explanatory. You really have to work to understand it. But I think at some point it's so obvious. And then I also like the movie being a circle in the end, it ending as it started. It's lots
like
of
the Andy Warhol movie.
You guys, have you ever been to a farm?
No.
Maybe really? Semi-farm.
What's a semi-farm?
It's not like huge acres of stuff. It's just small patches of shit growing and, you know, some farm animals.
Oh, so, but like farm style houses in rural areas with bad smelling animals.
Yeah, and everything is muddy.
How did you turn up there? What happened?
It was a, what is it in English? Sufi commune?
A commune?
Yeah.
That's different than
like
than
in
mine.
Midsummer.
Yeah.
Kinda, I guess.
Okay,
I don't know. No one had orgies with me. I wasn't invited.
Did you burn rape victims?
No, we didn't do any of that. It was a Thanksgiving thing.
So not like Midsommar. In Germany, actually, we have this thing where you will go to farms with children for a holiday. You will spend a week.
I just wanted to ask you, there was this place your sister wanted to go and there were cows. Was that a farm?
No, that's not a farm, Nisan. That was a zoo. Okay. No, a farm. So
it was in a rural area and there were cows.
So you in Turkey, people from the big cities don't go to farms for the holiday to meet animals?
No.
Okay. So could you still relate to this film being set on a farm, not knowing the environment at all?
I mean, many Turkish movies are about Turkish villages. We've seen them.
Yeah, in movies, but you personally have no experience with farms.
No.
Do you have to experience the farm and the smells to understand it?
You have to have smelled a farm to
know. Any whatever that Masker Bayram, you come to Turkey, you'll experience any animal smell you want.
Yeah. Oh, and the big cities too.
Yeah.
So. Maybe that's why you don't have the thing where you go to a farm for a holiday.
No.
Because that's not that much removed.
All right. I can find you a cow within like 1 kilometer radius of my house.
While Nisan was watching it, she was sending me messages about how, like, this Hungarian director, for example, he clearly hates villages and village life and small town life. Like, he doesn't hate the people, he hates the circumstances, and how this kind of stuff often gets romanticized in American and German media. And I mean this goes back to ancient Athens, where poets from the city would start writing poems about the great country life that is so much simpler and so much closer to nature and blah blah blah. There's these two schools of thought. One is a type of movie that you often see from people who have known poverty and small town life, like, for example, the guy who made This Is England or Bilatar, or like movies like this that show how depressing that is. And then on the other hand, there is stuff like Astrid Lindgren, which I think is an author you have too in Turkey, right?
Of course. Pippi Uzuncharap.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, interesting.
You don't know Pippi?
Unfortunately, no. No,
that's missed something.
So she's a Swedish author of children's books, and her stories are always set in these completely idyllic Swedish villages. For example, Bullaby, the children from Bullaby, and it's this place that consists of three farms. It's a lot like Shatantango, but it's very different, like in its tone and presentation. It's very, very different. You could almost say there's the Bilatar school of thought, and then there's the Astrid Lindgren school of thought. I don't know, Yaren, have you watched Gilmore Girls?
You keep saying that. I'm not going to watch Gilmore Girls.
You should watch Gilmore Girls. Gilmore Girls, I think, has a very different outlook on life in small towns than Bilatar films have.
Yes, it's like the Astrid Lindgren books in Gilmore Girls.
I tend to like the Bellata view more because I have lived in small towns in rural areas and they are hell. There's no discussion to be had there. Every time I watched Astrid Lindgren films, I thought, I wish Ingmar Bergman would tackle this story because you would just see how awful it all is. Or Bullaby, I always thought about making a long sequel to that, like a sequel when all these kids are grown up. And then I thought, no, that would be so fucking depressing. So yeah, you guys, where do you fall on the spectrum? Astrid Lindgren or Bellata?
I didn't live in a small town like in these Eastern European movies, but you gave a good example with This Is England. I grew up in Istanbul, but when I was 10 until 17, I had...
When you were all grown up at 10 years old.
Shut up. I don't like to say I grew up there because I'm from Istanbul. But anyway, I lived in a small town like in these British movies. And they're not like really farmy. There is industry in it, but they're small towny and they're depressing. So yes, I'm more on Bellatar's side because I didn't experience like that kind of poverty, but I experienced that kind of depression.
Jaren, what's your take? You've never lived in a village, as far as I know.
No, but I mean, in every single Turkish movie, it's portrayed as a place people trying to leave.
Well, have you seen Vizontele?
Yes, I have seen.
See, isn't that an idyllic village?
Yeah, but that's a feel-good movie. In majority of, you know, especially older Turkish movies, like every shit happens in a small village. Everybody's evil.
Yeah, okay. So let's not talk about Yılmaz Güney. Let's talk about the other Yılmaz. Let's talk about Yılmaz Erdoğan. Turkey's Astrid Lindgren. or for example, Babam Violum. Or even Vavien.
But Vavien showed like how miserable they were in a funny way.
But it was such a charming town.
Was it? Like, no. He tried to kill his wife.
Yeah, but rightfully so.
Yeah, and that's the depressing. I mean, it was a comedy, but come on.
It was so funny. Yeah, but I think the landscape makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Rural areas in Turkey just look beautiful and rural areas in Hungary just look like shit.
Yeah, it's probably also the difference between, you know, warm country, cold country. Cold country always looks like depression.
Shit.
In these Turkish feel-good movies, like Vizontele, it's also never about, you know, not like these American movies that someone is from the small town and goes to the evil city and comes back to the small town. It's just about communities in a small town. And they're also portrayed a little bit dumb and that's why they're happy, you know.
Okay, wait, but you just described the plot of Sweet Home Alabama and every Hallmark Christmas movie. And
yes,
I am so sure. No, but I'm sure that there's tons of old Turkish TV movies with the exact plot of Sweet Home Alabama. I'm sure about that because I've seen a documentary about Turkish exploitation cinema in which one of the directors said that only this type of movie was being made and he just wanted to make a science fiction movie. So I think you're lying.
Maybe. I'm not lying. I just don't know then.
Out of the loop regarding Turkish television.
And you say you grew up in Istanbul.
So Yaren, are there...
I did, kind of.
Are there tons of proto Sweet Home Alabamas from Turkey?
I'm sure there are. I mean, that's why Indian or New Age Indian cinema and series and stuff are so famous in Turkey.
I'm trying to think if there's something like that, like in Germany. German movies don't really
have stories.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or topics or ideas. No. And plus, I haven't watched a German movie in quite some time for reasons. All right, Yaren, one thing I was confused about watching this movie was Irimyash. He had a mission given to him by the police. And then he obviously had some sort of plan, which did that have anything to do with what the policeman wanted? Like, if I understood this correctly, the police wanted him to spy on the people from the village. I don't understand why. Like these were completely unimportant people living out of the way and being drunk all the time. Why did they need to be spied upon? Like, were they a threat to anything? That was a very a weird idea.
They're the Soviets, maybe?
I mean, they were all the Soviets. This is from a book. I think the book came out in 85 or something, or in 85. Bélata originally wanted to make this movie, but Hungary didn't allow that. And then he made it in 94. So I guess it's about communism because it sticks to the book. I took it a bit to be about the post-Soviet era, but whatever. It has to be about Soviet communism, and that makes sense. But why would they spy on these poor drunk people? Like, there were 10 people living on a farm. Why? So you didn't get that either, I gather?
I mean, yeah, I have no idea, but it's the Soviet time, so you spy on everyone.
Okay, okay. I thought that was what the doctor was for, because he was keeping notes on everyone. But okay, I actually read recently that it was just 1% of the people in the Soviet Union that spied on other people. It always gets made out to be a lot more than that. But that's just an Instagram meme fact, so I haven't checked that. I just read that on Instagram.
Communism is efficient, so.
Okay, so he was dispatched to spy on them. But that whole scam with the money, like, that hadn't got anything to do with this mission, right?
No, I guess he's just making his own side quest.
Yeah, and then he somehow wanted to buy explosives. What, am I correct?
Yeah, that I didn't get. What was he going to do?
I don't know. Explosives? And the guy who sold him the explosives talked to him as if he was some nationwide revolutionary. Jeremiah even said to him, "I'm not about liberation or something. I'm not gonna get the people to rise up." And he at some point he said he spoke about his nationwide spider net.
Yeah, he does give them like missions to go and blend in and whatnot.
Yeah, but I think he just did that to get them out of the way, to keep the money forever, right? He just wanted to dump them somewhere and have them.
Yeah, but I mean, if he keeps doing it all over the place, it might start something.
I mean, this was very, very unclear, but maybe that was even the comment. Maybe it was about how the politics are a mess or something. There was Nissan, you were speaking about the acting. It did seem less dubbed this time, right?
Yeah, I felt like, I mean, the movie had still this great one-taker Bélatar choreographies, but many of these acting scenes, for example, also the one which Jaren mentioned with the... Was that a police? I thought he was more like...
No, he was a police captain.
Oh, okay. It was like more edited, like, you know, usual movies.
Yeah, Agnes actually worked this time.
And I don't have anything against the one-takers. I think it's great. But it made sometimes, you know, his actors very awkward because everything was so like a dance. Mm. Yeah, this time it was more natural and... I could more listen to them. I don't know.
Yeah, the sound sounded more natural. I think there was still a lot of dubbing going on, like in the scenes when they were walking so far away from the camera. That was obviously not original sound, and sometimes the boot sounds didn't match. But it sounded a lot more convincing. I think there was dubbing, especially in the scenes involving Peter Berling. You guys haven't seen Peter Berling before, right? The doctor, the fat guy.
No.
No.
So he was a Fassbinder guy. In Werkmeister Harmonies, there's Hanna Schigula, another member of the Fassbinder family. So I guess Bela is a fan. Peter Berling was actually a producer for Fassbinder. He produced Beware of the Holy Whore and other fun Fassbinder movies. And he also acted in them a lot. And now he was here. I read a book by him. And then I stopped reading it because I didn't like him. I mean, he was convincing as a disgusting person, right?
But do you know if he speaks Hungarian?
I don't, I'd be surprised if like so many members of the Fassbinder family, like two of them, were actually fluent in Hungarian. That would be weird. But I mean, it looked like he was speaking the language, right?
Yes, it didn't look dubbed for me. Yeah.
Overall, he spoke so slowly, he might have just memorized it.
Yeah, right. So I'm not entirely sure, but Peter Berling, it was interesting to see him pop up in this. I'm gonna build another bridge to another legendary German filmmaker, because that's what I'm here for. Because this story, a person like an anti-Christ like manipulator, like he was even Christ-like, yeah? He was coming back from the dead. That was all the Christian imagery there.
And he had the typical Jesus haircut.
This story of a mysterious, enigmatic person invading a small community living mainly in mud having just one establishment to gather at and all of that kind of stuff, and then driving the mat slowly is interestingly something I knew this story. I just didn't know it from this movie. A while back, Christoph Schlingensief, who is a German avant-garde filmmaker who I adored as a teenager, had written some scripts that hadn't been produced, and I worked with one of his frequent collaborators, and at some point I made an extensive interview film with that guy about the making of the Schlingensief films, and he said at some point during the interview, "Oh, do you know I have three unproduced scripts by Schlingensief on my attic somewhere. You can go get them. Maybe you want to produce them." And then me and two other Hamburg-based filmmakers, we were over the moon about that, and we were getting a project together. His widow agreed to let us do it, his producer too, and then we started like a crowdfunding campaign and a press campaign and started getting that whole thing going. And the script that I was assigned had this exact story. It was called something Pussycat. I forgot the title, actually. I was about to change the title, but it was clearly inspired by Russ Meyer films, the title. But the story was there was a community of people living in the Watt, it is in German. That's like an area at the North Sea, which is very, very similar to what we've seen in this. Like it's at the sea, and it's very, very muddy there, and very, very bad weather. So they were living there, mud flat, Google says it's in English. So they were living there in the mud, basically, and having, I think, a hotel and something else. And then this stranger would turn up, and he would drive them mad, and these people would all go kill themselves. And it was written, I think, 95, 96. So I'm almost sure now that I've seen Shut and Tango that there was an influence there. Schlingensief famously took influence from international filmmakers for his projects. That all fell apart because once the widow saw that there was genuine interest in the by the press in the project, she suddenly pulled her support and threatened me personally, and I had to deal with a very disgusting lawyer suddenly, despite having discussed everything in detail with her, and I will hate her forever, and I hope she's in pain. But yeah, interesting to see this story again.
Now you see it wouldn't be even original. So you have
The way I would have made it would have been very different.
Things to do.
I don't know. I still like the idea I had for the movie, but this kind of story, like an enigmatic person invading such a community and driving everybody mad, is actually Lovecraftian archetype. Like, do you guys know Nyarlathotep? Nyarlathotep?
No.
No.
That's someone who turns up in Stephen King stories. Have you read The Stand?
No.
You guys need to get some horror education into your heads. Okay, so Nyarlathotep is very similar to what Irimiyash did here, and I often think that Belatar films feel quite Lovecraftian. Maybe that's because of the philosophy, like the very dark and brooding philosophy behind everything, that they would tell similar stories. But oftentimes Belatar reminds me of Lovecraft stories. Maybe Belatar should make a Lovecraft movie. Maybe he should adapt Innsmouth.
It's so weird. Every time we talk about Belatar, like he's still living and these movies are not that old, I'm always thinking, but wait, isn't he dead? And
no, he's retired.
Are the movies not like 50 years old? But no, they aren't. I always forget this.
Yeah, no, A Tour in Horses is from 2011.
I know.
And I think he's still making short films. And Agnes Renitzky, by the way, who is the co-author of these films, basically, together with Laszlo Krasznahorkai, like that's, and Mihály Vig, who was playing Irimiyash, like he's the musician. So they're a whole team, and I think the whole crew is still around.
That's nice. Yeah. So they should make a Cthulhu movie.
Yeah, they should do that. Come out of retirement, Belatar, and make a Cthulhu movie. You guys...
And they're good with animals.
No, he made a documentary 2 years ago.
What was it called?
Missing People.
Oh, interesting. I want to watch that. There's a documentary about him making A Turin House. It's called I Used to Be a Filmmaker, which is such a sad title, right?
Yeah.
the title makes me cry. I bought a book about Bellatar. It cost 14 euros and it's a tiny little pamphlet. I'm quite angry. It's also bad. it's a bad book.
It looks like a passport.
Yeah, and it just retells the film in even more confusing ways. It's fuck that book. Do you guys find these films to be comfort movies at all?
No, as I said, I felt sick.
Really? Jaran, you too?
No, definitely not.
So I'm the only one?
I mean, even if the subject wasn't depressive, just the looking at non-moving pictures for I don't know how long, it's just too much.
I find these films so comfy.
What's wrong with you?
They have this film look to them, and they have this fairy tale feel. They just remind me.
Fairy tale feel?
Yeah, right. It's just a bit removed from reality. It's dark fairy tales, of course, but fairy tales are dark. I'm from Germany.
Well, I needed to watch the OC after I finished the Bellatar movie just to make me feel a little bit better
new
again.
One?
Yeah, but
there's
a new one?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, no, sorry. There's a new Gossip Girl.
Oh!
Gossip Girl is too rapey.
Yeah. OC is just a little bit rapey. OC is just deal with it.
Yeah, it's more slut shamey and more victim blamey. It's not that rapey.
You know, the 2000s, because like OC is about rich people in LA, and Gossip Girl is about rich people in New York.
Yeah, but
kind of cool too.
But OC doesn't have that effect for me. Like I used to watch these dark and brooding fairy tale movies, like the Never Ending Stories for example.
From a Bellatar movie and went to OC and
because we're watching
Girl.
About we were talking
but maybe
about
we should
comfort
give,
movie.
We should give the new Gossip Girl a chance. Maybe it's not that rapey because you know 2020.
So. Yeah, it's gonna be 2020 woke. I love those. That was an irony, you guys. I just didn't like the new Sabrina.
Oh, was it PC?
Well, yeah,
I
that
like
was
stuff
not
to be.
The problem was the cat was not talking.
Yeah, exactly. No, I want
what?
Stuff
really?
To be PC,
that's
but
stupid.
I want the PC-ness to feel organic. You know, I don't want to feel like oh, there's a bunch of conservatives putting on a leftist face. That annoys me. Do you not get that feeling with
I know what you mean.
Like 2018woke stuff. It's,
yes, but I also think we're just too old for. The teenager series.
I don't think so because those things are still written by Gen Xers.
Yeah, they're weird.
they're just writing what they think people want to see and they don't really get it and they aren't really... I don't care about woke. That's a weird word. They aren't radical leftists. I want my stuff to be made by radical leftists.
Yeah, but then those...
Or honest fascists like Mel Gibson. So this is no, I'm the only one who finds Bellatar films comforting.
Yes.
Like a warm blanket.
There's something wrong with you.
No,
you're living with a psychopath.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm questioning everything right now.
You just don't know
don't
what.
Don't kill my cats, please.
Not today. but I love.
By the way, the cat in the movie looked exactly like our cat, and it was.
I think they actually killed the cat. By the way,
interesting. Let's have this discussion because I read up on this. They didn't. But why do you think that?
Or drugged or something?
Yeah, they did.
The cat did suffer.
No. That's apparently Bellatar's and Agnes Ranitsky's personal cat.
Oh, okay.
They prepared for the scene days before. Like for example, the cat torture. That's the part that I'm a bit annoyed at by people for not seeing that is not actual torture. Like when she rolls around with the cat is actually slow blinking at the girl. And stuff like that. They had the girl and the cat bond like days before and established all these movements as games with the cat, which is so clever. I've never seen like cats being handled this way. Yeah. Then
I also like the fact that it was Bellatar's cat.
Yeah, I like that too. And then they had a vet present while they shot to make sure that like they did nothing that could actually hurt the cat. And then right before the milk scene, they gave the cat like a shot of I don't know, the stuff that they get when you neuter them. It looked exactly like what Yahweh went through. so they did that right before they did the shot, and then you see, maybe that's pretty convincing, because it takes like half a minute before the cat starts getting tired.
Still not cool to do that.
No, debatable. I think it's less bad than what I was led to believe. Like I read up about it. I was on the train and I read about this scene and I read about people being very upset about it and the film being banned in Britain because of that and stuff like that. And I got scared and I wrote to Nissan the time codes of what to skip because I thought I will hear about that forever.
But that's the other thing, you shouldn't really skip that part, because
it's a fantastic part.
I saw parts of it, but I really couldn't watch it. The cat looked just like Yahweh and I needed to cuddle him like the whole day.
But the thing that I am not so sure about is like, okay, the cat killing and the cat torture, I read all that and it sounded very convincing to me. Having been on film sets, having worked with cats, I thought, yeah, that figures. Plus, apparently, like the cat was around later on. He could show it. He could prove it. But the cat corpse, that looked fucking real.
Yeah.
Can't have been the same cat for reasons of rigor mortis. They can't have, or I don't know. Rigor mortis had set in when they started. So
if they drugged the cat, it's super easy to shut those.
No. It was so stiff. Like that was dead. that was either dead or a prop. And it might have been a prop. We've never seen a close up of it. Mm-hmm. Which maybe for reasons like impossible to really tell. But
can you not research that too?
The things I read about, he was always confronted about the torture and the killing, and he explained, mm-hmm. No, we didn't kill the cat, we didn't torture the cat. It's we did this and that and that. But I haven't seen anyone asking him, where did that corpse come from?
Yeah, that would
it's a Hungarian village. You find cat corpses
probably
everywhere.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about. Like, okay, so you did have that cat, but what about
the other one?
I mean, it just looks like
the one who played the dead cat.
It just looks like every cat. So, but now they never have a close up of it, and it might easily have been a prop. But yeah, that was the thing that I was concerned about.
It was a good prop because it really looked. It felt like maybe it was the effect of the scene. It felt like it got stiffer and stiffer.
Yeah, that
and heavier
that bothered
and heavier.
Me.
I don't know.
That bothered me because an actual dead body will get stiffer and stiffer, like 6 hours after being killed. Like it can't be that they have killed the cat and then later on we see the actual cat getting stiffer and stiffer because of time and how long it takes to set up shots. Like if actually that cat goes through rigor mortis while we see that, it can't have been the same cat, or it can't have been killed in that shot.
So they didn't kill that cat, but multiple other cats.
I struggled with that. I really, really, really struggled with that. Like that looked very convincing to me, but also
maybe they said, we would never kill our cat.
Yeah. Or we would never kill a cat on camera. But that bothered me more than the torture and the killing, because that didn't convince me that much. But it's the long takes too, right? These long takes make you think, wow, how would they have faked that? Yeah. Makes
it was so sad how she later cuddled her cat and killed herself. It was so depressing.
Yeah, I've never seen this depicted like that. Like the child torturing the cat, but obviously not really understanding the consequences of her actions, and then later being so distraught by that. I don't know, Yaren, how did you feel about that whole episode?
I was just amazed that they actually did it. Like today's cinema, you can't, it's impossible.
Can't kill cats in today's cinema.
Or kids.
Or kids. We killed a baby dog, a puppy, in a movie, and people were upset about that too. Mm-hmm. And also we did that in a long take. So maybe same effect.
Yeah, but like I really don't understand that. It's obvious that we didn't kill it. You don't see anything.
Yeah, right. But I read people pointing out that the girl broke bones of the cat. And
yeah, sound effects.
Exactly. Like the cat is held out of shot and then you hear stuff. And it's like, yeah, guys, didn't even sound. Okay. Okay. So
and speaking of, if you really, really in that scene from our movie, if you really pay attention, you can hear the dog breathing after he
No,
died.
You can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. I checked that so thoroughly. The dog doesn't breathe afterwards.
Which movie was that?
Performaniacs.
You watched it too, and you also said to us we have to make no animals were harmed in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't.
On the website. On the website. Does the doggy die?
Yeah, right.
It says yes for performaniacs.
Really?
And animal abuse.
What?
Yeah. Oh no!
What website? On IMDb?
Does the doggy die?
What?
I mean, the dog dies. Yeah. It's animal abuse. It will trigger people. That's what it's there for.
Like there is apparently autism specific abuse.
Autism-specific abuse in Performaniacs?
Yeah. What? I don't know.
Ah, they
there's
mean...
hate speech.
Yeah, there's hate speech, yeah. There's a lot of hate
there's
speech.
There's anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semitism is also in Performaniacs, yes.
Well, where do you read that? But it's not portrayed as... Oh my God, I don't know if I can see this. I'm too sensitive.
No, that's a website that warns you of triggers in movies.
Oh my. And our movie is there?
I mean, it was made to be there. Yeah, here it is. Okay, let's see.
Oh my God.
Let's see. Okay, is there a dead animal? Yes. Does the dog die? Yes. Does the animal die? Yes. Are animals abused? Yes. Okay. Does someone use drugs? Yes. Does someone abuse alcohol? Yeah.
No,
Sibylle, she's drunk a lot.
Oh, okay.
Is there autism-specific abuse? How? You guys.
But I, how?
I don't know. Autism-specific abuse?
Yeah,
I don't understand autism, so whatever. Sexual is there sexual content?
Yes.
Yeah, more or less. Homophobic slurs? Yes. Hate speech? Yes. Ableist language or behavior? Ableist language? Maybe.
Oh my God.
Are there fat jokes? There aren't any fat jokes.
There's one scene where Sibylle says she has a fat ass.
Okay. Oh my
God. New girlfriend of her ex-boyfriend.
Is there anti-Semitism? Yeah, there's anti-Semitism. Is there blood gore? Yes. Oh, that's a fantastic side. I want to. Okay. Back to
okay,
the movie
now
that we're talking
obsessed
about.
Obsessed with the side.
No, let's go back to talking about Shatan Tango before I check all our other movies. Is there a dead animal? Yes. Does the animal die? Yes. Someone commented a fly? No, it's a cat. Oh, besides a dog, cat, or horse. Really? Another animal? Okay. Are animals abused? Yes. Are there bugs? Yes. Does a cat die? Yes. Whatever. Okay. So this is getting boring. Oh yeah, there are spiders too. Did you see the cigarette burns, Jan?
I wanna say no.
Okay, I never noticed that as much as in this movie. Because on film, like if you use up a film reel.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Interesting, right? Because I thought like doesn't Bellatar ever say cut? Like, does he just let the reel run through? Like, so if you use film on the last few frames, there will be like a black circle appearing in mm-hmm. the upper right corner of the image.
I think everybody burns. Knows that after Fight Club. So
That wasn't Fight Club. I thought everybody knows that because there's a John Carpenter movie called that. But okay. So you in this film, you always see the cigarette burns. That's how I knew that the shot would eventually end at some point. So I actually think he never said cut. Like they said it's a landscape movie and you have to live in it and breathe with it. And I think that makes sense. It's comfortable. It's so comfy. You guys
know it's really like, do you, when you watch this movie, do you want to be there?
No, I'm happy to not be there. It's like when it rains outside.
That's comfort you get. I hate it when it rains outside.
No, like when it rains outside and it's very warm here and you have your warm blanket and you listen to an audio cassette where somebody tells you a fairy tale and you drink your hot cocoa and you eat a cookie. That's very comfy.
Is it a German?
That's very white of you.
Well, I think I'm as white as they come, so I don't know. I'm very, very Aryan. which is why my movies are so hateful. By the way, to anyone listening to this not knowing Perfomaniacs is specifically about edgelords being edgelords. So we show them being edgelords. We
are
do
not
that.
The anti-
We're not endorsing them.
Semitic people.
Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, but that's not the intention.
The bad guys in the movie are.
Yeah, right. But just because you portray something as bad, you still portray something. Like if you were talking about a movie with rape in it, most of these movies are clearly on the side of the victim, but still.
Oh, but that's interesting. We didn't get rape or sexist check.
For Perfomaniacs.
Yes.
Is there rape in Perfomaniacs? I've never seen.
No.
But
that's something you can be proud of.
Yeah, right. There's sexual harassment in Shutter Tango, but only very briefly, and we just barely see it.
You mean the bar scene with Mrs. Schmidt when everybody touched her?
Yeah. Well, that's more or less consensual at times. But no, there's a. Yeah, it's also in the bar scene. It's before she goes dancing. There's a guy coming over to her, grabbing her boobs. Next to her husband,
yeah,
and she goes
like 2 minutes.
Yeah, and she goes, and oh. you're just letting this happen, and then he, and then he goes and balances his piece of bread on his head. He's such Mr. Schmidt is my favorite character. but
best couple ever.
Best couple ever. Yeah, couple goals. The Schmidts. the guy playing Futaki, he played Karer, I think it was, in Damnation. He was also fucking another man's wife. That seems to be a recurring topic.
That's his thing, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna talk about
like
our movie.
Everybody was having sexual intercourse with Mrs. Schmidt.
Yeah, everybody was having intercourse with.
She was the village hottie.
Even Irimiesh and the little boy wanted to have intercourse with Mrs. Schmidt and also with the other Mrs. because she had big boobs too. Both of those women were 50 and like not conventionally attractive.
You expressed yourself in a very PC way, didn't you?
Yeah, I just learned about this website. Does the dog die?
Now you have to be careful.
Yeah. People get cancelled. I heard on this internet. I've heard so much about.
We are not famous enough for that.
Yeah, we're easy targets.
Well.
Okay. To not give people ideas, let's move on from this topic. The Doctor, and that's another thing that goes back to my early career. The Doctor has the plot that he discovers he hasn't been outside of his home for a while. He discovers he's out of alcohol. And so that means he has to leave his flat to get new alcohol. And then he gets drawn into a Lovecraftian nightmare. And the end of which, he just collapses on the street next to a field and dies. Do you know what movie that also happens in? Like, he doesn't die. No, he doesn't die. But he collapses. He collapses. That happens in my debut film, Why Hans Wagner Hates the Starry Sky. It just came out via SRS Cinema on a beautiful Blu-ray set, the Cthulhu Trilogy, my three first movies, all Lovecraft.
I loved it. How you showed to the DVD in our living room.
Yeah, I was pointing to it.
People were saying, I'm telling.
Well, that was for myself, because that's really a beautiful Blu-ray from the boutique Blu-ray label SRS Cinema. And this is not an advertisement, because that Blu-ray sold out within a week. So
it's just bragging.
It's just bragging. But that movie has the same
plot. Check later on doesthedogdie.com what your other movies have.
Yeah, but let's do that later. That's the entertainment for tonight. I will read something about myself. No, but that has the same plot. That's such a fun coincidence, because I swear I hadn't even heard about Schaffen Tango when I made that, because I was like, when I wrote it, I was 20 years old and very, very stupid. I had just discovered Khodorkovsky and thought I was very, very, very much the cinephile for knowing, I don't know, the Holy Mountain or something like that. but yeah, that also, like, in the beginning, the main character discovers that he doesn't have any alcohol left, and so he has to leave his flat, and then everything starts. So I just wanted to point that out. People, yeah.
I was like that too when I used to be a chain smoker. I don't like to leave my flat too. But every time when the cigarettes were, you know, how do you say it? There were no cigarettes anymore. I just didn't had another choice.
Yeah, terrible, so terrible.
I can relate to that guy.
I mean, now in lockdown times, you could tackle this kind of plot again.
Yeah.
I could do a Hans Wagner remake. I could just go and repeat myself.
Do it if you want to.
Nah, no. My next project is much better. My next project actually, you know what? You know what? When I made Hans Wagner, I thought I was ripping off this novel that I had read as a teenager. Actually, I hadn't remembered it quite as well as I thought. It's not quite the ripoff that I always thought it was. But that novel is the thing we do next. So we're adapting the novel I thought I was ripping off when making my first movie. That's the next thing. And we're going to do it in Ukraine. So that sounds similar to Hungary in German. Ungarn,
it's
Ukraine.
Eastern Europe.
It's where all the
same roads feeling. Meet.
Yeah. Jaren, do you think this would be a Netflix series today?
No, I mean, if you partition this even to like 40 minutes to an hour episodes...
I mean, it was broken down in episodes, 12 episodes.
Kinda, but I mean, you would just watch an hour of nothing happening.
Mostly. I mean, yeah, but Netflix did have a touring horse. So I mean,
it wouldn't. I don't think this would be produced by Netflix, but Netflix could shove it.
I think Netflix. I could see Netflix actually producing like not in the 90s, not this, but. Taking Bill Attar on as a director they endorse.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think Bill Attar could make a project for Netflix.
Oh, you mean they would be producers from the beginning?
Yeah, he could come out of retirement. Okay. I would write him a Lovecraftian script and he could make that for Netflix as a miniseries.
I'm not sure.
Like not Shatan Tango, let's replace Satan, Cthulhu Tango. Cthulhu Waltz. Cthulhu Waltz. Bela, call me. I know you're listening to this. You must be listening to this. You're retired. You're obviously listening to podcasts talking eloquently about your art. Call me. We're going to make Cthulhu Waltz.
I feel like Netflix is not into artsy movies.
But sometimes. I mean, Roma was all about slow circles in camera movements and stuff like that. And plus, they did have a touring horse, so...
Yeah, but they didn't produce it.
No, but they bought it.
But yeah, maybe.
I think Netflix will make Cthulhu Waltz. All right. Bella, call me. Bella. Jaren, would you watch Cthulhu Waltz?
I mean, I'm just wondering if Bella Tai is actually listening to this. If
yeah, he would I was end up thinking watching about the same thing.
No, but yeah, if he would end up watching Gossip Girls because of you two after listening to this.
You know what? I was talking like all the time before we started recording today. I was talking about how much I want Bela Tarr to make some OC spin-off. Bela, don't listen to this next part. We are going to make Cthulhu Waltz. That's the project. But still, on the OC, Ryan's mother, she's a character like straight out of Shatan Tango. Like give me a Ryan's mother. I don't know her name. Ryan's mother OC spin-off made by Bela Tarr. Or, and this is what we're also... we were talking about. Jan, have you ever seen anything by Antonioni?
No.
No, me neither. But people say these are very slow black and white movies about the emptiness of the lives of rich people. Because we were talking about if you could make something equally depressing about rich people. And I think Bela just could.
But you know what?
I think his latest documentary is about exactly that, by the way.
Oh, that's so fascinating. I have to watch it. Yeah. Nissan, let's watch it tonight.
Yeah, we can... No, not tonight.
Never enough Bela in our life.
Watch it tomorrow or this week. No, I just wanted to add, speaking of cheesy 2000 comfy series, mm-hmm. which we both very, very like. Mm-hmm. Gilmore Girls has a character. His name is Kirk. And he makes movies.
Yes, he makes black and white art movies.
He makes black and art.
And in the beginning of those movies.
Like Bellatar movies.
Yeah, and in the beginning of those movies, they will always have a black screen. And then it says, a film by Kirk. And I own a shirt. That says, a film by Kirk. It's fantastic. Yeah, Kirk, you couldn't make a Bellatar film about Stars Hollow, though. That would just not work. There's actually the Gilmore Girls revival.
South Town Tango.
No, I'm going to come back to Shut Down Tango. So there's the Gilmore Girls revival. And in the Gilmore Girls revival, we're still in Stars Hollow. We're still with the same actors, playing the same roles, doing the same things. But they're all 30 years older. Like, they look 30 years older. They're actually 20 years older. Whatever. And it's so sad to watch it. Because but what you're basically watching is decay. And much like in some Bellatar films, not a lot is happening in the Gilmore Girls revival. So the Gilmore Girls revival is actually like Gilmore Girls could have a second revival made by Bellatar, which would
in black and white.
Yeah, which would maybe be very similar to Shut Down Tango, because it's also about this crumbling city where with all these old people, no new kids and stuff, and they're just still that still acting out that day to day, and it would be so sad and so crushing. And Erika Bock, I know you find that name funny because you're Turks, but the young actress, the child in this, and later in the daughter in The Man from London, and then the daughter in The Turin Horse, her name is Erika Bock.
Now I got your shit joke.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So Erika Bock is an actress who was only in these three Bellatar films with a striking looking face. She could play Rory in that version, but the other actors I would want to
Mrs.
have to
Schmidt say. Is Lorelei.
I don't know. But, okay.
Let's go back to Shut Down Tango.
Okay, back to Shut Down Tango. I just thought like this kind of movie is actually what like Netflix series are now. Like
not really.
The Netflix style binge series is a 10-hour movie.
Yes, but
They have shit ton of beats compared to anything Bellatar does.
Have you watched Nicholas Winding Refn's series on Amazon Prime?
It was on Amazon Prime. It was not on Netflix.
Okay, so you think Amazon Prime would make the Cthulhu Worlds?
Pitch it to Amazon Prime. Okay.
I will pitch it to both of them as soon as I get that call from Bellatar.
I think you should pitch it to Criterion Channel.
Yeah, maybe.
But
maybe.
What is Cthulhu Waltz is about?
Cthulhu Waltz. I'm not telling you. give me money, Criterion Channel. You pedos. And I'm gonna tell you what my awesome series is gonna be about. The way our life is going right now, Nissan, this might actually lead to someone calling us.
Yeah, we have luck these days.
Improbable things are happening.
Let's not become assholes. Let's not lose that.
Yeah, you're not actually pedophiles.
Don't get canceled.
You just pay pedophiles. Why would I get canceled? I'm the most radical leftist around.
Yeah, you even let women speak.
Politically correctest
Tell
person.
Tell us about the show you did.
What
radical
show?
Radical leftist. What you do for your rent money.
What I do for a living. We've talked about the cat stuff. We're actually at the point where I'm going to talk about the show. Because, Jan, is Shut Down Tango misery porn?
Not really, no.
No, right? I mean, it could be, right? It's focused on the misery of poor people, right? It's showing that in detail, right?
Yeah, it's not glorifying anything. It's just showing you what's happening without any single cut.
It's showing it. It's showing even a child's suicide. It's showing extreme poverty. These children sure are even hungry. They are living in a rundown village, and somehow it doesn't feel cynical, right?
No.
Okay, so let me tell you about the show I did last night. Because I'm angry. So we have this radical right-wing newspaper in Germany. It's called the Bild-Zeitung. Like, they are published by the Axel Springer Verlag. The Axel Springer Verlag did fun stuff, like back in the 60s and 70s, they would print the heads of leftists, young leftists in Germany with like a bull's eye on their foreheads and stuff saying, shoot these pigs. And then people would go and shoot them. So that's the Axel Springer Verlag. That's the Bild-Zeitung. The Bild-Zeitung will title with stuff like every 7 seconds we have a new immigrant and stuff like that, yeah. And they will paint this picture of all immigrants as being rapists and taking all this money from us. So these guys are evil. They are fucking evil. Recently, this publishing house bought some international media conglomerate. So the New York Times got interested in them and suddenly did a big story about the editor-in-chief of the Bild-Zeitung actually pretty much abusing his position to abuse interns or something. And that was like an open fact on that newspaper. And now that they were internationally shamed for it, they suddenly fired him. And now a woman is editor-in-chief of that radical right-wing disgusting propaganda paper. So these guys who actively work towards there being places like the Moria camp that we hear so little about lately, who actively work towards the misery of like refugees from everywhere. These guys have a show on publicly funded television, and it's so interesting that this is taking place on public television. Like we pay a de facto tax for these channels so that these radical right wingers can have their live shows there, and they have this show where this old rich evil vampire person who owns that publishing house, Friede Springer. Why is that person still alive? She will sit there and she will have a charity event. And 80 celebrities from Germany were there taking calls from people who could then give for the good cause. And the good cause was to help children. And they would go to places like coal mines in India, and then they would have these rich German celebrities turning up there and looking into the camera, crying and being all like, oh, I suffer so much because I saw these terrible things being done to these children. And then they will say, oh no, there are poor refugee kids in Bangladesh. Yeah, there are fucking refugee kids in Moria too, and it's your fucking fault, Bild-Zeitung. Whatever. they will then proceed to film these people at their homes and be like, it's also terrible. It's also terrible. Please, let's give them millions. And then they will also go to children who have like terminal diseases, and they will go to children who have like late stage cancer. And film them in the hospital and have like some celebrity go to them and give them a skateboard. And it's then like, oh yeah, look at this poor boy. I'm so touched. I'm so sad because he's going to die in a week. But luckily the Lidl concern bought him a skateboard. Thank you, Lidl. And then they will have like children come to the stage and name all these big companies that are at fault for the suffering that they show in their pornographic clips. And thank them and say like, thank you, Mercedes-Benz, for donating $300,000 to the good cause.
Wait, were they all women?
No, they were all children.
No, I mean those German celebrities you are...
No, I was impersonating the children they had given on stage and thanking the... Yes!
Ew!
Yes!
Okay.
Yes!
I thought you were being sexist.
No, not this time. Usually, always. I'm owning up to that. So like that was the most cynical thing you could ever imagine. And I hated it so much. And before and after, I watched Shut and Tango. And then at some point, I thought when that kid committed suicide, I thought, why doesn't this bother me at all? And like last night when I had to commentate that charade of rich right-wing radicals being disgusting, I was so angry. So you guys, why didn't Shut and Tango bother me? Why isn't this cynical?
It's obvious the one is made to tell these lives, and the other one is made to hand job the rich people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that
really
was my...
Sorry that you went through this. Thank you for prostituting yourself.
Yeah, this is a safe space, Lars.
Yes.
Sorry for the little rant. I had to swallow a lot of puke last night. So, good Lord, that was disgusting.
One day we don't have to do these jobs anymore. Like 3-4 months ago, I had to play a role. It was a Muslim journalist, a radical Muslim journalist with headscarf, and she was manipulating the police to show it like they're being racist. That was my role.
Yeah, yeah. So you were framing the poor policeman.
Yes.
and making it look like the German police could ever be racist.
Yes. So I also had to shower after that.
You guys, I forgot to mention that our new chancellor was in that show last night. Like that was a 3.5-hour advertisement for big companies financed by like basically tax money. And then the fucking chancellor had the time to go on stage of that charade and do the following thing. They had like, we had this whole discussion in Germany about hospital staff not being paid properly. And like now in the fourth wave of Corona, we have less hospital staff than we had in the first wave. And everybody just accepts that because people just can't do it anymore because they don't get paid and they have to work so much. And instead of changing anything about that, we're just okay with, I don't know, having the emergency state getting worse because people quit these jobs. So they had three people from hospitals, like you know, nurses, up on stage, and people were applauding them. And we just had this whole hashtag thing: applause isn't enough. So then the fucking host comes on stage and said, "I know, applause isn't enough. We've listened, we've learned our lesson. So here's the new chancellor, and he's gonna personally thank you." Like fuck these people! It was about money. They need money.
Personal thank you is not enough. New hashtag.
Yeah, right. Fucking girl. Good. So yeah, Bilata says he makes
with German politics.
Yeah. Bilata says he makes movies about poor and ugly people being poor and ugly himself. I think I don't know, Bilata. He might not be the looker. He's not a model. He's a director and he looks like a director, but he's not ugly, is he?
No, I don't think he's ugly.
He's quite swaggy.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yaren, your comment on Bilata's looks. remember, he might be listening and I want to get a project off the ground with him.
I actually haven't seen his face.
Oh, you should. He gives lovely interviews. There's a lot of stuff on YouTube. There's actually a thing where he's in a university speaking to the students about the making of, I think, Werkmeister Harmonies, and it's really interesting. And he's I don't know. I like the way he speaks. It soothes me. It comforts me, much like his movies do.
You're so weird.
He looks like a friend of mine when he gets older.
Yeah, I think he looks like a friend to me too.
Your friend is ugly.
No, nobody thinks of their friends as ugly.
I wouldn't call him ugly. He's a regular guy. Yeah. Bellatar, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I read so many remarks on that, like Bilatar looks like a character from his own movies. I think for that his sunglasses are way too fashionable. But yeah, this is another thing about his movies. Like when these people when they are at the bar and they drink alcohol and they smoke, it feels so much like they are poisoning themselves because you can see the traces of that poison in their faces, right?
Yeah, when he said that the cat torturing scene was not real, but the drunk scene were real, the actors were really drunk. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. They just look drunk and getting drunker by the minute.
Yeah, I mean, he always makes drinking look so disgusting. And more than that, this time there was a guy at that bar, and he was constantly repeating himself. And yelling and repeating
that
himself.
That was fucking, oh my God. I wanted to kill that guy.
Yeah.
But you know, drunk people do that.
Yes.
Like when you're among drunk people and you're not drunk yourself, like there's a point, I think, when like the memory is starting to not work anymore, when they start saying the same thing over and over again, not remembering that they just said it.
And there is always like in a party or bar or whatever, the life before Corona, one guy at least, or one girl. There's always one person who tells the same story over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
And when I'm drunk, I feel like I'm just...
Well, you also forget it immediately, like they forget it immediately.
Maybe I'm like that too, and I just don't remember. But some people, and that's always at least one person, they are really calm. And like they don't stutter or so.
No, they are also so slow. They yes. repeat themselves and slowly. And you think, that's what I think.
I think it's when they try to not, when they try to act sober.
Yeah, yeah, know? That's when it gets bad. Act drunk, just get naked. That's at least entertaining. Yeah, no, but I thought that was spot on here.
I mean, if everybody was drunk, of course.
Yeah, right. Do you know this? I don't know. Was that a thing in Turkey too? Like, I shamefully have to admit that this was a thing I did in my early 20s, and it's a form of cynical misery porn. This habit of frequenting the shabbiest bars around just for the kicks.
Not for the kicks, just because they're cheaper.
Yeah, that too. Like that it seemed to me that like in the early 2010s, that was like a hipster habit to go to the dangerous looking bars, because that was sort of humorous too. There was an irony there.
I'm a girl. I wouldn't go to dangerous looking bars.
I wouldn't go to
a dangerous bar in Istanbul also.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm just talking about like trashy, like, the shitty dive bar type.
Yeah, no, we have a district in Hamburg called St. Georg, and that's where like all the drug dealers are, and that's the place where you actually might get mugged. Like they are not selling there, they are buying there. And like in those bars, like you might walk into one of those bars and it's crowded with people who are all getting supplied with drugs in the toilets.
And also there are prostitutes, and I feel like one time I saw a minor prostitute, and that was really concerning.
Really, the prostitutes I see there are always like around 50, and they look like straight from Chatantango.
Yes, the
like Mrs. Schmidt would make a lot of money in St. Georg.
Yeah, but
and the other misses too, and they get so aggressive, like they yell after you, and when you're like clearly not interested because you're not even half their age, they get angry.
They never yelled at me.
The prostitutes at Gepaban are much more accommodating, huh?
And like there was, sometimes you see like police reports hanging there that some prostitute was murdered again. It's really bad area.
It's a bad area, yeah. But I feel like a real city needs some area where it's really seedy and shady and dangerous. Like I don't like sanitized cities like New York.
But no, New York has them left and right. What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't know. We were in the Bronx in New York, and I never felt like, oh, this is the famous Bronx. This doesn't feel dangerous. This is I don't know.
Yeah.
This feels like the suburbs.
Dangerous part in New York. We couldn't find it.
Yeah, we were looking for the dangerous part. We wanted to buy drugs.
I'll take you next time. Oh, drugs you can buy anywhere now.
What? Okay. We need to travel together.
No, it's legal.
No, I mean drugs that don't make you sleepy.
I don't do chemical skits.
Marijuana drug Jaren gave us in New York. It was happy drug.
Oh, that was nice, yes.
It's really different in Germany or in Hamburg.
Yeah. German weed is sleepy weed.
You gave us nice weed. It was like ecstasy. I mean, the
good thing is you can choose in the US.
Yeah, and like our new government will actually legalize weed too. That's in the new contract, so it's coming. So maybe we will get better weed in the future, and I can switch
you might
to legal
coffee shops.
Maybe let's see how that all turns out. Yeah, this thing about the village having one bar. I lived in Holmseppensen, a significant part of my life, which also had one bar, and it was exactly like this one. Even though the people living there were very rich, it's weird. It's a village thing more than a poor
people
thing.
Would they hang out there? The rich people?
The middle class people would hang out there, like teachers mainly. If you wanted to see a teacher's drunk.
Share a pastry thing with a teacher like that?
No, I was banned from entering. I once smashed a guy's beer glass because the guy was a known Nazi, and then there was some trouble, and then they didn't like me there anymore. They liked the Nazis better, so.
Yeah, do they still let the Nazi in?
Yeah, of course. Yes, but they're closed now, so they got what they deserved. Ruin and decay. Last thing I wanted to talk about is, and this might not hold water because I know that Bilat has said this is not true. So Bela, don't listen right now. But the way I see it, this felt a lot to me like a political metaphor. Like there's a beaten down people, there's an abandoned youth that behaves cruelly and dies young. There's a political class that toys with people's hopes, that shames them for their situation, and that invests their money in like explosives in war instead of in the promised future, in the promised hope. So and in Werkmeister Harmonies too, it felt to me like that there was this decaying corpse of a whale at the marketplace in the center of this town, which was like the center of all the madness going on, which felt to me like, okay, that's the Soviet Union decaying, and that's bringing all this horror. So to me, at least these two films feel like, and this is my suggestion for a film time of the week, poetically political cinema. Does that at all ring true to you?
Sure.
Okay. But yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah, me too. You already told me that. And I said, yes, that's great.
You guys are so monosyllabic today.
Why?
Yeah. You're like Bilata characters.
I mean, we're, it's a seven-hour movie.
Yes, what do you expect? I mean, we were really talkable in the beginning. Now you get tired.
All right.
But you are doing a great job.
I was going to suggest real-time cinema.
Real-time cinema. I love that too, yeah. Real-time cinema. Oh, that's like the 24 series, right?
Yeah, maybe the first season.
I mean, that's not cinema, but yeah. Do you have other examples of real-time cinema?
No, I try to refrain from them. If it wasn't for the podcast, I wouldn't watch it. No.
You know what? Victoria is real-time cinema.
Yeah.
That I don't know.
I mean, that's one take, and it's the story is as long as the movie.
But it's not about being one take. It's about, you know, watching a kid waiting, sitting on a wall with the boredom that she has for that whole moment. It's just...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And Victoria's more...
Yeah, there's action. Definitely. Yeah, plus it feels compressed. Like they get such good friends in such a short time. Yeah,
for example.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I like both. Let's take both.
Cinema. I'm thinking, yes.
Real time. Real time.
What did I say?
Real life cinema.
Oh, I meant real time.
There is this movie of paint drying. You know about that?
No, but I was thinking of Elephant Waiting Still as real time cinema. But yeah. Close.
Yeah, I actually do like that. Other than Yaren, like it's exhausting, but sometimes I think you gain something from sitting with like a landscape, a mood, or even a boredom. It's
so you I don't know. There's something to that. Director while watching that.
Exactly. So there's time to do your research while the movie is going on.
It's practical.
Yeah. It's ADHD. It's not my fault. It's not. I am not diagnosed with ADHD. That's bullshit. Okay. So, Yaren, what was your favorite quote?
I mean, the dialogue was great on this, but I didn't have many candidates after the first minute. Which was also a surprise, you know, starting with the dialogue in Bellatar movie. I think what was her name? The lady who sleeps with everyone.
Mrs. Schmidt.
Yes, she says, "We'll go mad in the end," at the very beginning.
Oh.
Which is kind of true.
Which is true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that too, by the way, in the beginning, that I was hooked really fast.
Yeah, me
too. Mm-hmm. Other Bellatar movies.
Even though it started like with a multiple minute
shot of cows, but even that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, you get over that quickly. Yeah, interesting. I also liked when the, I don't remember the exact quote, but when the police captain asked Irmiash, like, do you not have any respect for work or working people? And he answered, no.
Yeah.
I love that too.
And it was like after a pause, like, no.
Right. I was thinking about that. Like, what an absurd question. And I also found it quite funny when the policemen were like changing the wording of his report. I don't know. It says she's a fat, disgusting whore. What am I going to write?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah. Cheap whore.
Cheap whore. Yeah. And then they
say human with low standards.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
gives herself away freely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so why is this here? Okay, so the death cult obviously wants to tell you the world is hellish, so let's blow it up.
Or the cinema person wants you to have like a real life cinema experience.
Yeah, like
a real time. Why do I say it wrong again?
The cinematic 12 monkeys obviously want to save this. Like I read about Shut and Tango for a long time being a rare movie. Like you couldn't really get it for a long time. Like it was around on VHS and you could get like rips and stuff, but it was banned in Britain because of the cat thing. And in many other places, it just hadn't come out. So people were hearing about this enigmatic 7-hour movie that was so very depressing. I think that's a kind of magic that movies have lost, right?
I mean, some movies you still can't access. There's this vagueness of them.
Yeah, which ones? Tell me a hard to access movie.
I don't know. I mean, it's mostly about production companies and distribution and all, but some movies they show in one or two cinemas and then never release it on DVD, so you never get to see it.
I think right now it's actually really hard to see my Cthulhu trilogy because it's completely sold out. So that would be one of those three of those magical movies right there. Kind of dangerous.
You can always send the DVD set to the first one who comments on iTunes.
No, I want to have my DVD set to look at it and feel good. Okay, no, but I can send a screener link to people who write great reviews on iTunes. I can do that. Next week, what are we watching next week? I have no idea, but I think we're done with Bela for a while.
Yes. It's Kieslowski.
Okay, that's perfect.
Still, at least shorter movie.
Yeah. I love Kieslowski. I think it's just now that I have really grown to completely love Bélatar. Even films we have talked about that I was sort of, I don't know, on the fence about because they are so exhausting. I like looking back on them, I uncritically love them. But yeah, Kieslowski, I've watched quite a lot of Kieslowski by now. And I love every single film I've seen by him. Which one are we watching next week?
It's called No End.
Interesting title for a movie to watch right after Shut and Tango.
Where is it? I can't see it.
Bez Konja. Okay. Does it look I guess social realism, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Okay.
It's about family drama. And
we have a 10-hour monolith coming up by Kieslowski too, right?
No.
Decalogue. Yeah, we do. But that's a series.
Oh, that's fine. That's episodic. That's okay.
Yeah, and it's great. I've seen like half of it already at some point. It's fantastic.
I still think Decalogue is by Tarkovsky.
No, it's Kieslowski.
Yeah, I learned that.
it's far better than Decalogue, anything Tarkovsky.
I think
has
of Tarkovsky.
No, I'm very cold on Tarkovsky. Nissan is already looking up our movies on that site. So I guess that's a sign to end the discussion on Shut and Tango. Next week we're going to talk about No End by Kieslowski. That's it from my end. You guys, I have nothing more to say than bye.
Bye.
Bye.